Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast on this April afternoon. It's glorious weather outside, it's a beautiful day and the football season is almost over. We've only got three games left. We are here to talk about Norwich City's 2-0 defeat at home to Cardiff and of course all the ensuing Norwich City matters here, there and in between and whichever way you look. My name is Michael Bailey. I am with Chief Norwich City correspondent Paddy Davitt and our esteemed colleague David Freezer in one of the sort of back meeting rooms of Archant Towers. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are we doing? Pad, how are you?
Yeah, I think you summed it up there pretty well, mate. Yeah, it's the season that's about to end. And to be fair, it's felt like it's ended quite a long time ago. So roll on the summer.
Dave?
Yeah, it's nice to have some warm weather. When you disappeared off on your paternity leave, it was pretty much the coldest game I've ever covered against Reading. So you've brought the good weather back with you, at least. Congratulations, by the way, on the little man.
Thank you. Yes, everyone's alive. That's good. It did strike me going to the game on Saturday. I didn't know if it was my brain was fried, but just how cold it was before. And now how lovely and warm. It's light when we leave the ground.
About time.
All these things make an intrinsic difference. Sadly, so usually does the result, Pad. And it was a home defeat against Cardiff. I mean, we saw positive signs against Villa, didn't we? And I mean, tell you what, put me right here. I haven't been to a game for a few weeks and I really enjoyed Saturday. Am I a bit delusional?
No. Why did you enjoy it?
I thought it was competitive end to end. I thought there were a lot of, well, it was a really combative game. I mean, I didn't really enjoy the refereeing performance, certainly in the first half, but maybe we'll skip over that. But it seemed like there were two sides going for it. I felt like there was something riding on the game. And yeah, I enjoyed the spectacle. It's clearly frustrating that Norwich can get themselves into good opportunities, but without really creating good chances. That's kind of how I define it, and that's a frustration, but yeah.
Well, I think you basically, in a nutshell, encapsulated what the issue is for me, written about it today, is to the edge of the box, and even in the box, they're fine, but they can't put the chances away, and as a result, we didn't have a Villa-type result. We had a Cardiff-Fulham-type result, so you know, that is now moving into the summer, looking positively forward. That's the key for me. Find some goals, find a striker who can score a few goals. And you might see more of those type of performances, but crucially with the right result. You know, me and Dave were at Sunderland midweek, 18 attempts on target. You're reliant on your captain and your fullback to score in the 89th minute to rescue a point. And even after that, Josh Murphy's had a great chance, James Maddison's had a great chance. You know, this isn't a new trend. This is basically, if you want to be brutal about it, an indictment on this set of players. They don't have the ruthlessness, they don't have the killer instinct or the clinical edge on a regular basis, and as a result that's why they're 13th in the table. Now flowing out from that is a lot of debates about Farke's style and what he wants to do and systems and formations, but I think ultimately you can boil it down to they don't have enough players who are able to score enough goals, and if that doesn't change by bringing in new players in the summer, we'll be here again.
That's a really interesting point, because speaking to Jamal Lewis after the game on Saturday, I said, is it a quality issue that you can't score? And Jamal said, oh no, I think we've got the quality. James Maddison, Nelson Oliveira, they've both shown that, and Josh in spells, and he did then mention Dennis can chip in. I mean, three of those players might not be here next year for starters, but are they actually good enough? Dave, I suppose, is the question.
Well, no, I guess. Is it based on the evidence that we've seen? Is the harsh answer? I mean, I agree with you that I enjoyed it as a contest on Saturday. It was an enjoyable game, and a draw would have been a fairer result, because you can't ignore that Cardiff did have chances as well. And as much as they're the antithesis of Norwich City this season in terms of style, they know what they're doing. And as ever with a Neil Warnock side, they're well drilled and they did it well, you know. Aaron Gunnison's long throws aren't attractive to watch, but they did for England at the Euros, and they've done for plenty of teams along the way, and it works. You know, Stoke did it for years with Rory Delap as well, so you have to be able to stand up to these challenges. In terms of the goals, I mean, Dennis Shrabeni had opportunities. You know, he hit the post. I'm looking at a picture in front of me here of that fantastic block by Shaun Morrison at the end of the first half. It comes down to just having that ruthless edge and doing that thing and finishing things sort of half a second quicker than a defender can react to it. And It's not an easy fix. I do half wonder whether Daniel Farke perhaps could have held his tongue a little bit on his criticism of the strikers, of Oliveira, I suppose, in particular, of the fact that so many chances have been missed. He's been through a bad spell, but maybe Daniel should have waited until the end of the season before basically admitting that they're not scoring enough goals and that he needs new strikers, which is what he's said in so many words in interviews with Paddy. And yeah, perhaps that wasn't good man management. I'm not sure. I mean, if you know, they scored three against Villa and Josh Murphy looked on fire that day, and we weren't talking about this, but then you've had two games in a row where they've passed up a fair few chances, and to answer your initial question, no, they're not good enough in front of goal.
It's an interesting point about in terms of the progress. I've spoken to a couple of people having come back, and they want to see the progress, and they're not necessarily convinced it's maybe there. But Norwich have been better second half of the season, Paddy. So I guess everyone's willing for there to be a sign of things moving in a better direction.
Oh, no, I would tend to think that there is grounds for optimism and there is progress. But it's the scale of the progression and it's the speed of the acceleration, and then ultimately what is the end goal? You know, is it to be in Cardiff's position in 12 months and actually pushing for automatic? Is it to be in the top six, or is it to be slightly better than they are this season? I think therein is an area of this whole debate that is a little bit grey rather than black and white for me. Yeah. So, but if you're asking me, are they a better side now than when they went to Millwall and got whacked? Yes, no doubt about it, but they're not the full package, and that's the frustration, that you can see a lot of good pieces of the jigsaw in place now, but unfortunately that jigsaw is going to get turned over and they might potentially have to be starting again, or at least finding a lot more pieces than they would probably like to, ideally. You know, no club in the Championship certainly would want to lose a James Maddison, but I think the financial situation is such that will be the case, and obviously therein lies an issue in terms of how you replace a guy like that.
Yeah, there's two players I want us to discuss, and I guess Maddison probably has a slightly bearing on one of them, which is Maurice Leitner. He came back into the side on Saturday. I'm a big fan. I would have no hesitation if he was a player that Norwich continued and were able to keep hold of beyond his loan this season. Is it even more important that someone like Leitner stays at the club if they do sell James Maddison?
Big time, yeah. As we stand today, if you can get Maurice Leitner back on a season loan next year, I can't see anybody not wanting that, because you can just see that he's got the quality straight away. Considering he'd been out for a month, he looked very classy on the ball, and I always think Norwich look better when you've got him or Tribal alongside Tetti, because they set the tempo of the play, don't they? And I think he looks like someone who could play in the Premier League, but with his fitness issues that we've already spoken about, having sat on the bench at Lazio and Augsburg, he hasn't played enough football, and the injury had disrupted him again with Norwich this year. So if he can get a full season under his belt, I think there's a Premier League player in there, and Norwich could definitely benefit from keeping him around.
100% agree, yeah. And it isn't just the fact that he was sat on the bench for more or less a year. You know, he hadn't played any football whatsoever when he arrived. If you got him back at the start of the summer and he had a pre-season with Daniel Farke, then I think you would have a very good player on your hands. And again, I said it the first day I saw him, too good for the Championship. But, you know, hey-ho, Norwich, if they get him in, then they can worry about that further down the line. All day long. And I would now throw Reed into that category, but obviously that's dependent on Southampton's Premier League status, I would suggest, which is looking pretty grave at the minute. And if they do go down, I don't think there's any chance Harrison Reed is back here next season.
Yeah, Phil, there was a Harrison Reed interview, isn't there, in the programme, gents? I think you two have both read it. I haven't had a chance, so do you want to give a praise for me and for our listeners?
I think most of it was backwards looking, to be honest. It was looking at games that he's played in, and there's a little bit about his adjustment to playing at right back, which I spoke to him about. Ooh, when was that? When was the first game he played right back? Brentford. Yeah, and it was his 23rd birthday, wasn't it? That was January, February time. So yeah, he was talking a bit about that, how he'd had to get used to one-on-one defending a bit more, but that he's feeling fairly comfortable with it, and then in terms of his future, that it is up in the air, which for both clubs and for him, he doesn't really know where he is. But again, at right back, I mean, you could arguably say, maybe a little bit controversial, he's probably played better on Saturday than Ivo Pinto has at right back all season.
Oh, Dave, you can say whatever you want, mate.
But I don't know. I'm not a massive fan of Reid in central midfield, just because I think he doesn't have the physical size and strength to win the battles like Alex Tetti does. But at right back, if he plays consistently like he has pretty much when he's played at right back this year, then I think he could have a decent future there.
I think the fact that Reid can play both positions is why you'd want to keep him, because I think he's got quality and versatility. I also think you could probably find players who are better specialists in both positions as well. So that's kind of, and whether that would be good enough for Harrison, I don't know. But it does look like Southampton are probably going to get relegated, doesn't it, from the Premier League? So it'll be an interesting one how that plays out in the remaining weeks. Angus Gunn was the other one I wanted to discuss, Pad. I get the impression that there's going to need to be an early decision with Angus in terms of where he goes next year, because Man City, if they're going to loan him out, they'll want that sorted quite quickly, and he'll need to embed in a new team because he'll want to go somewhere where he's really going to be number one. Otherwise, what's the point? He needs the games. Seen a couple of... I mean, I thought that first goal was an error from him personally against Cardiff, leaving his first near post exposed. The QPR... one of the debacle. Are we calling it a debacle? Was it a QPR debacle officially?
Surrender, I think I called it. Capitulation.
Yeah, got a few. I mean, the goal Matt Smith scored was pretty hideous as well. He'd gone so long without making a single mistake, so clearly we can't sit here criticising Angus Gunn, but it is interesting. It does reiterate he hasn't had a full season yet as a professional. We're still not even there yet. So just find it interesting what this all does to the dynamic of where Angus does find himself next season.
I can't see it. I can't. If you're trying to paint a scenario where he's in goal for Norwich, I just don't see it. I think he's outstripped, setting aside two errors, which come at the end of an unbelievable, as you say, debut season in professional football. Far exceeded, I would say, expectations in terms of his consistency levels, all the clean sheets that come with it, clean sheet record before Christmas, intrinsic part of that. So I think you can forgive him one or two errors down the stretch. Wasn't helped by his defence parting for the Cardiff first goal, it has to be said. That was a free header for Zahore, wasn't it, in the build-up? But no, in terms of his immediate future, don't see it. Don't see it. I see him now in the Premier League on loan at mid to lower ranking clubs. I think he's now too good for the Championship, and I don't think Norwich will be able to do that deal. And I don't think if the guy's got Premier League clubs interested, he would particularly want to come back to Norwich, despite all the emotional pull of it all. I think he's been there, done it now, and sadly for Norwich, time to move on.
Good job. At least one of the errors came before the TNC podcast he did with them. Otherwise, we'd be blaming that. I'm only joking, Jack and Chris, don't we?
It almost felt like sacrilege, but I did the six things for today's Pinkin. And
thanks for that.
If you've not had a look, that's at pinkin.com. And one of them is on Angus. And it feels like sacrilege to criticise him this season, really, because even before he arrived, it was the story, wasn't it? Brian's son, Norfolk boy. Isn't it great to have him back in goal, despite having lost into Man City all those years ago? And then he's just been so consistent, and we've not talked about hardly any bad moments. There's been great saves. I mean, Bristol City's the one that stands out. He was fantastic at Sheffield United on that day at Bramall Lane when he managed to wind up the entire stadium, and he's just fitted in seamlessly. And then QPR and this, I mean, you could almost, if you were being really harsh, you could say Norwich lost because of Angus Gunn, because of that goal. I mean, it was almost like a penalty save, wasn't it? Zahore did him with his eyes, and Angus has left that gap at the near post, which he just shouldn't have done. He knows that full well, and his dad knows that full well, watching from the stands as well, I'm sure. But if that little wobble that he's had here then becomes a bad end to the season, then, of course, that's going to make potential lower league Premier League clubs question whether he's quite ready, because I see this little wobble, and that's all it is at the moment, two mistakes which have proved costly, as a reminder that he's a young man. He's 22, he's England under 21 goalkeeper. In terms of a goalkeeper, he's still a baby, and he's got plenty of years ahead of him. So even if he does end up back in the Championship, whether it's with Norwich or someone else, it's not going to do his overall career a massive amount of harm. But hopefully he can just find his feet again, finish as strongly as he's been for the majority of the season. And then, I see him as being at possibly one of the promoted clubs next year, possibly Cardiff.
Possibly. Thank you, Dave. That's the ideal segue, because I did just want to take a little break to have a quick look. I mean, you guys saw the Fulham game, so you've seen Fulham really recently. Villa, I got to watch on the telly, and you guys were both there live. And, of course, Cardiff now. So they are the three teams vying for second place, aren't they? I don't think anyone else can do it. Who's going to finish second? Because to me, Cardiff deserve a fair amount of credit. People will say, well, they weren't very good on Saturday, but off the back of two defeats in a crucial time of the season, they did keep it together and they pulled out those two goals. 86 minutes onwards could be so crucial. And when you, as you said, mentioned, Dave, where that first goal went in, the weight lifted. They were excellent as soon as they got ahead.
Well, that was combined by Brentford then blowing a lead, Fulham blowing a lead to Brentford in deep in Stockbridge Time at Craven Cottage in the evening kickoff. Then it's an unbelievable result for them. Of the two sides, having seen them both recently, Fulham were far better side, better players, better style of football, far more threatening. But I would have to say, with Warnock at the helm, Cardiff pragmatically will probably grind out more results down the stretch. I can see them holding off Fulham now. They've got a game in hand. He'll fancy that, which is, by the way, the Derby game, which was, everybody knows what happened there, you know, and you can imagine there'll be plenty of motivation coming from the Cardiff end for that Derby game. So if that's their game in hand, yep, I can see now that's a big, big stumble by Fulham, because they had got themselves in the box seat. But I can see Cardiff in the Premier League now. Yep.
I mean, Villa can still just about get in there. They're 4 points behind Cardiff, but to be fair to them, they've bounced back from the defeat here. They beat Cardiff 1-0 and then Leeds 1-0 Friday night. So they are still in the mix. That was a big concession from Fulham, of course, but Derby looking a bit like a dad's army, aren't they? You know, it's not the first time that Derby have run out of steam at the end of a season either. So I could see Cardiff winning that game in hand, and then all being well, they're 4 points ahead of Fulham, and that's probably going to be enough at this point. And again, going back to six things, I made the point, Warnock deserves praise, because he's not everyone's cup of tea, of course, and he took over when they were near the bottom of the table. Paul Trollope made a bit of a mess at the start of last season, dragged them up to mid-table. To even be in with a shout of automatic promotion at this stage, without spending millions, I mean, I know they've got a little bit, they're a decent-sized club. I think it's an incredible job, really. Whether he could kick them on in the Premier League, I'm not sure, because he's never really done it at that level. If I was him, I'd probably consider retiring at the end of the season if you get them promoted, and just leaving on a high, because he's on a bit of a hiding to nothing in the Premier League, isn't he? But he's got to get there first. But fair play to the guy. He always seems on a bit of a charm offensive at Carrow. I've thought that several times over the years, that he's always fancied a crack at the job here. But I think we can be fairly certain, with Stuart Webber as sporting director, that is not going to happen.
I mean, I love Colin. Sorry, I mean Neil Warnock. It's one for Donny there. One for Donny. Pad, let's just touch on Wolves as well. They've got a shed load of money, they've spent a lot, they've got Champions League players, they've won the division, they've looked a class apart since basically kickoff. And as Ryan Bennett tweeted himself, released last year, he's won the title this year. Big John as well. Your moment to pay tribute? That's a bit disingenuous, isn't it? But I mean, they always had that quality, I suppose, did they, those two? Or are you a bit surprised that Ryan's featured so much?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, let's get it right. You know, he wasn't good over the piece at Norwich. You know, this time last season, he was making rick after rick. I don't think there was too many crying when he was one of the release players, let's be brutally honest. John, definitely, because of what he has done, or what he did with distinction during his period at Carrow Road. So, but credit to the boy. You know, he's got himself into a very good side, and he's retained his place. So that is a huge amount of credit to him. You know, he's always had ability. Maybe the maturity has come now and he's realised that the penny's dropped. And if that's, as he framed it himself, being released, that would have been a bit of a jolter, I would have thought. And if it's allowed him to knuckle down, and he's obviously was lucky enough to get a decent club, but he's made the most of it, fair play to him. And it'd be interesting now how much they feature going into the Premier League era, because, as you say, very deep pockets there now. I think there'll be a serious splurge in the summer, because they will have a crack at really not just staying in the division but pushing on again, I think.
Yeah, it's a cracking point on Ryan Bennett's release, because you don't know what he'd have been like without that. So that's exactly spot on. George Mendes will be on the phone now, getting his ducks in a line and just advising gently what Wolves should do. Ryan Sessegnon, I think, we picked up Championship Player of the Year last night at the late awards. So, gents, do you want to name your Championship Player of the year? Because, you know, should it have been Ryan Sessegnon? Who would you name it as?
Cool. Dropped that one on me a little bit, Mark.
Don't worry, I can edit the gaps. Don't worry, Dave.
Well, I mean, Sessegnon for 17 is, has been a revelation. But, I mean, the player that I probably rate highest, I'm worried I'm going to steal this one out of your mouth, Pad, because I know you're a fan of him as well, would be Tom Kearney. I think he's a fantastic player at Fulham.
So you're saying Ryan Sessegnon's not even the best player at Fulham, never mind the best player in the division?
I think he's the story, isn't he? Because he's 17. He's basically got the same stats as James Maddison this year, and Maddison's got 4 years on him, isn't he? So, I mean,
he's playing left back.
Yeah, they've managed to get him left wing eventually, haven't they? Because they signed the lad Target from Southampton, so that's freed him up a little bit. And to be fair, Target and Mitrovic sound like they've really kicked Fulham on since they came in January, so good loan signings there. I think in terms of pure quality, Kearney's probably the best operator in the division, but the boys that they brought in at Wolves as well, Cavallero, Bonatini, Neves, they're all very good, but they paid big money, and Willy Bolly, they're all very, very good players, aren't they? So when you've got that sort of money, you should be winning the title, really. And John and Ryan, good lads. I don't think any Norwich fans wouldn't say that, but they got themselves a good gig there, and if they can manage to perform for them in the Premier League, then fair play to them.
Yeah, I wouldn't look beyond Neves for me. I think he is class apart. You know, the fact that he'd probably go off to the World Cup with Portugal, that's the calibre of player he is. I mean, you saw the goal he scored the other night. Yeah. Just there's not too many in the division. Probably Maddison is one of them who could produce a piece of brilliance like that. So he's just elevated them from well organised under Santo, you know, experience with the likes of Ruddy. But he's a bit of an X factor. But looking at the paper, I do like the boy Morrison. I think he's been excellent. I mean, Warnock's calling him a colossus, 12 out of 10. He's not going to get too many headlines, but he's been absolutely intrinsic to where Cardiff are this season. And, you know, we've all seen what a decent centre-back can do down here now with Hanley. They're the type of players that won't win too many awards, but without them, you're not doing too much in the division.
12 out of 10, I love that.
Sorry, I think Morrison or Bamba should have been in the team of the year ahead of John Terry. I think he just got in there
John
on profile.
John Terry was in the team of the year?
Yeah, in the championship team of the year, that is. That's just on profile. I mean, he was injured for, what, 2 months or something like that?
That basically just undermines the entire point of the awards. I'm not happy about that.
Well, there was quite a few things looking at those awards last night. It seemed a bit pointless, to be honest. But,
go on, Dave.
John Ruddy got into that team of the year as well. Him and Maddison were in the championship team of the year, and they then somehow drained that down to an EFL team of the year as well, which includes League One and Two, and you've got Adebayo Akinfenwa in there up front and whatever. So the only other thing I would say as a competition to Neil Warnock for manager of the year, I had to say Neil Harris has done an absolutely incredible job at Millwall. I mean, we saw how they tore Norwich to pieces at the Den that day, and they've got some good little players there as well. George Saville looks like he's going to go on to have a good future. So I think that is one in isolation, Millwall, because it's a slightly different club, isn't it? I mean, if they did get up, I could really see them upsetting some big teams that come to the Den next year. But whether Neil Harris could do that job elsewhere, I don't know, because he's a, you know, club legend, isn't he? He had testicular cancer, and then he came back, and there's a whole big story there, isn't there? So it's his club, and I think that's a real nice story. I'd like to see them, despite their history, despite their fans not covering themselves in glory a lot through the years, I think that would be a great story to see them in the top six.
Everyone hates Millwall except Dave Freezer. The thing about Neil Harris and Millwall, the January transfer business was excellent. It looked excellent at the time, and it's proven so, most definitely.
Harry Toffoli, you mean? Poor boy, hasn't even played, has he? I don't think he's barely played for their under 23, so that was a bit of a weird one. They just took on his contract for the remainder of the season and haven't used him. So.
Hoped he would impress. Maybe he hasn't quite managed it. But, you know, he's had kids, so that does distract you. I've found.
You can tell us all about that, Michael.
I'll save that for my daddy only podcast I'm going to release in a few weeks' time when I get some sleep. Right, let's look forward to this coming weekend. We have three games, as I said at the start of the piece, three games left. The first of those, Paddy, is a reunion with Alec Neil at playoff chasing Preston North End.
Yeah, no, he's done an unbelievable job. We're talking about jobs. He should be in the mix if you're having a debate about managers, because there's no way Preston, too many would have expected them to be 3 points off the playoffs as they are now. Mm-hmm. And that's with a blip. I think they'd lost the last two or three. So they probably would have been in the top six if they hadn't had that phenomenal job. And let it be on the record, they had to sell the boy to West Ham, didn't they, for big money, the striker. Hugo.
Hugo, wasn't it?
So to do that, phenomenal job. Nice to see on a personal level, because, you know, irrespective of how it tailed off at Norwich, he was excellent to deal with. So it's good to see him bouncing back. But there's one thing for sure, Norwich will get nothing easy there this weekend. You know, if they go with the, dare I even say it, the QPR defensive mindset, they'll get rolled over if they're not ready to roll their sleeves up and fight and battle. And conversely, if they exhibit the same profligacy in front of goal as we saw against Cardiff, then they won't get nothing either. So I'm really looking forward to a 9-hour round trip.
This is a question to both of you. Dave, first, will there be a bit in the Preston dugout that would love to beat Norwich, and also would there be a bit at Carrow Road where they would love to end Preston's playoff ambitions, given, you know, the manager used to be down here and etc.?
To an extent, I suppose there's not that many players left who are going to be that bothered about Alex Neil, really. Even when he came back in, what was it, November, the 1-1, that Maddison free kick which curled in at the back post.
Feels like a lifetime ago, though, does it?
It does. There wasn't a great deal of animosity that day, and Alex seemed to quite enjoy the whole thing. He was, even in the press conference and stuff, he was quite happy with his day's work, and I don't think he felt like he got a particularly, antagonistic welcome or anything like that. I think people were generally pleased to see that he's getting on well. Declan Rudd, of course, in their team as well. I was just checking on my phone that he was back in the team, because he's been a little bit in and out in recent weeks because he had a kid, didn't he? So,
this is my point again. Anyway, carry on.
They beat QPR 2-1. Incidentally, QPR's results since Norwich lost 4-1. I'm there now, Michael. They lost 4-0 at QPR. They beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-2, and then they lost 2-1 at home to Preston. I mean, they are the most Jekyll and Hyde team in the division, aren't they? It's just ridiculous, but I digress. Yes, Alex will be bang up for it, of course. And they need to win that if they're going to get in. I've got the table here in front of me. They're, 3 points behind Millwall? Yeah, 3 points. So they have got to beat Norwich if they're going to get into the top six. And if Alex does manage that, to be fair, his profile is going to be bubbling along nicely. What is he now? 36? Something like that? He's still very young for a manager, because he turned up here when he was about 24, didn't he? Yeah. And, yeah. If he can pull it off with a win over Norwich, he's going to enjoy his Saturday night beer rather a lot, I would imagine.
Yeah, and Bristol City really dropped off a cliff, haven't they? I mean, they're still just on the fringes. Dean Smith, another one who's done a brilliant job with Brentford too. What do you reckon, Pat?
In terms of
I forgot what the question was. Whether there'll be any needle between Alec and Norwich? And as I said, there's a lot of fans who really respect the job Alec did here anyway. So.
No, I think there might be one or two in the certain boardroom at Carr Road who'd like to see his ascent end. I would think that's safe to say, given they decided he doesn't fit the profile of what they wanted moving forward. I think from his side of the fence, that probably would have ended with the Carr Road return. You know, you can't keep reliving that. So, you know, you've got the first one out of the way, but like when Lambert pitched up here with Villa, I think that's done and dusted now. And it is very much purely about 3 points to keep their playoff hopes alive. I don't think the fact it's Norwich will be immaterial, I think, for Alec Neil. I think, you know, time moves on. He said that himself, hasn't he? He said that himself around the time of the November return. You know, Norwich went in one direction, he's gone in another. And for him so far, it seems to be working.
We'll wrap it up now. Obviously, loads of time to talk about transfers and what have you going forwards. We don't worry about that. But I'm going to dump something on you guys again. Sorry. One thing you're looking forward to. We've got 3 games left. The one thing, or a one thing, the thing that's keeping you going between now and the end of the season, the thing you want to see. The remote drop of excitement.
Dennis Shrabeni hat trick.
Yes, Pat. Yes.
Big guns.
Of goals, yeah.
What else?
Yeah, just checking.
Missed chances.
A bit unlucky not to score on Saturday, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Blocks by defenders because he can't move his feet quick enough. Yeah, all the above.
Dave?
Beyond the end of the season being the one thing? No, I'm going to go for the... Yeah, I'm going to go for that. It's felt like limbo for quite a while. I mean, there's, I think, a great deal of season ticket holders and maybe more experienced, shall we say, supporters switched off, or maybe what's the word in terms of computers, you put it on standby almost, people have just been taking it in, not worrying too much. I didn't feel like many people walked away from that ground on Saturday thinking, oh no, this is horrendous. I think most people saw that Norwich gave it a good go, there's nothing left to play for, Cardiff had something to play for, they managed to get the job done, and I think most people went home, had a beer and didn't worry about it too much. But you go on social media and people are acting like it's Armageddon. So I think we just need the season to be over before we can really start to talk about things in sort of true reality almost. Get that pre-season done, get the transfer work done. And yeah, if we're in this situation again, 10 games, whatever, dozen games at, up to Christmas, and Norwich are still looking like a work in progress under Daniel Farke, Daniel knows full well that he's going to be in, under intense scrutiny. But I think there's, as we've said for a while, there are still enough sort of green shoots of encouragement that we can hope that we're going to see something decent once, as Pad's analogy started earlier, once the pieces fall into place at the start of next season, hopefully.
I love it. Mine will be three words: savouring Wes Houlihan, whatever happens from here. But we're not going to discuss the testimonial because that would obviously be ridiculous.
Based on the cameo on Saturday? I described Wes as walking nostalgia during the game, didn't I? And that's almost how he looks to me, I'm afraid. I find it a little bit sad to see him out there not at his full powers.
Stop souring it, Dave. That's what I'm looking forward to. Don't take away the only thing I've got left to look forward to for the rest of the season. Under 23s, we did say we'd have a chat because last home game, wasn't it, on Sunday? Yeah. At Wolves. I won't ask about Matt Jarvis, obviously, because I don't want you hiding your conspiracy over why he wasn't involved.
That's weird.
But what do you want to say? Because, I mean, it's all wrapped up. They've got one game left, and it's Matt Gill's been in charge. And has it delivered what it was supposed to, the under 23s this year?
Well, they won that game 2-1. Tristan Abraham scored, and his play allowed Marco Stiepermann to score the second. That was a nice goal, actually. Took the ball in his stride, chipped the keeper. Keeper did get a touch to it, and the player tried to clear it off the line, but the linesman gave the goal. Stiepermann was very good, actually. He played centre midfield, which is something we haven't really seen in the first team, and he looked very well suited to that, actually. And as you would hope with a 27-year-old with his experience, he looked physically stronger and fitter than the young players he was up against. Overall, I mean, they're heading for a sort of a mid-table finish. I think it's difficult to judge them too much overall because it's changed so much. I mean, the academy is obviously something that there's a lot of attention on. It's being trimmed and slimmed down, and you're seeing a lot more of the under 18 influence at 23s level, and the players who would be senior 23s, your Godfrey's, Campbell, Morris, Remy Matthews, although he may be 24 by now, they're all out on loan, aren't they? So it's kind of a strange situation, really, isn't it? Where perhaps back in the day, you had your fringe players in your 23 squad. If you want to go back to sort of Daryl Such and Jerry Goss and stuff in the 90s, Rob Ullathorne, they were on the fringes, weren't they? Whereas now, those players who have got the potential are out on loan. And they'll be the guys who are going to be in and around the first team next year, aren't they? Whereas your Tristan Abrahams, Aston Oxbury's just signed a new contract. They're probably going to be the ones who are looking to go out on loan. And then again, you're sort of seeing how the under-18s can cope. Your Adam Iders, Max Ahrens. So it's an interesting one. I had a chat with Matt Gill about all that. And they had two trialists yesterday, for example. Adam Lund, who is on Barnsley's books, 19-year-old defender, and a lad called, if I remember, Sol Milovanovic.
Lovely.
Who I think is left Huddersfield with them letting their academy system sort of wind down, as it were. So, and I asked Matt, you know, what's the potential of them joining? And he made the point that we need to sign players who have the potential to step up to the first team, not just signings to fill out the 23s. And I think we've seen a few of them in recent years, haven't we? You know, maybe someone like Ebu Adams, maybe I'm being a bit harsh, but never seemed like he was going to get near the first team. So in the current financial climate for Norwich, I don't think we'll see too many players filling out the 23 squad in the same way. And what that means in terms of league position and how competitive they are in terms of results is the challenge for the young lads to step up to, I think. But overall, yeah, Stieperman back from 2 months out with a hernia operation, wasn't it? And Matt Jarvis, Daniel had suggested, could be involved but didn't end up playing. So whether he will play in their final game, which is away at Villa a week on next Monday when this goes out, we shall see. Whether we'll ever see Matt Jarvis in a Norwich shirt again, I don't really know. But
he's got a year on his contract, yeah, mate. So
he has, but the person on Twitter who seemed to think that I had some kind of conspiracy hiding what was going on with Matt Jarvis, I certainly do not.
As I told Rossi, I was at Bure Valley Railway. It's all fun. We'll wrap it up there. Gents, thanks so much for your time. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Much appreciated, as always. We will be back on the other side of our trip to Deepdale, the one that Pad's really looking forward to. What do you call it? A 9-hour round trip?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
That's without stop, boys. That's purely in the car.
We are stopping.
Big time.
We've got to make the most of these.
10-hour round trip, though, basically, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's going to be a long day.
You should see Pat's face now.
We survived Sunderland, though, didn't we?
Lucky boys, well done.
Right, let's wrap it up. Thanks, everyone. As I said, we'll be back after Deepdale. Until then, pinken.com for all your Norwich City needs. And we'll see you on the other side. Good night.